The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Our topic today is preventing and reversing diabetes through diet and using your everyday food choices to help with the management of the disease. And I'm so excited to talk today with Brenda Davis, a registered dietitian who's a leader in her field and an acclaimed speaker at nutrition, medical, and health conferences internationally. Brenda has worked as a research dietitian, public health nutritionist, clinical nutrition specialist, nutrition consultant, and academic nutrition instructor. Brenda serves as the lead dietitian in the Diabetes Wellness Project in Majuro, Marshall Islands. As a prolific health writer, Brenda has co-authored 9 vegetarian and vegan nutrition classics with over 1 million copies in print in 13 languages. These include the Kick Diabetes Cookbook, which came out this year, Becoming Vegan Comprehensive Edition, Becoming Vegan Express Edition, Becoming Vegan, Becoming Raw, Becoming Vegetarian, The New Becoming Vegetarian, The Raw Food Revolution Diet, Defeating Diabetes in Dairy-Free and Delicious. Her most recent works, Becoming Vegan Comprehensive Edition, won the 2014 Real Best of 2014 Book Award, and Becoming Vegan Express Edition won the Canada Book Award and was a finalist and received honorable mention in the Forward Book of the Year Award. She's currently working on a diabetes book and a diabetes cookbook. Both are set to be released, or one has already been released, and another will be released in 2019. Brenda has authored numerous professional and lay articles. She's past chair of the Vegetarian Nutrition Dietetic Practice Group of the American Dietetic Association. And in 2007, she was inducted into the Vegetarian Hall of Fame. Brenda, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Dr. Berquist.
And this topic of diabetes affects so many people. You know, last year, the CDC estimated that over 100 million adults in this country, in the United States, have either diabetes or pre-diabetes. And this is a largely preventable disease. So we're so thrilled to talk with you about the dietary component, because there's so much people can do through the management of diabetes, not just to prevent, but even for people who have diabetes, of actually reversing the disease.
Yes, I've just been shocked to see the extent of the increase in rates of diabetes. In fact, a position statement recently suggested that between 49 and 52% of the American population now has either diabetes or pre-diabetes. This is really scary, because what it means in terms of when we think about all of the consequences of this disease, it's just not good news. And the good news is that we can do something about it. This is a disease that is probably more treatable and reversible than any of the chronic diseases we can think of.
Yeah, and I've seen estimates that as much as 90% of diabetes is preventable through lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's profound when you think that almost half of the people in this country are battling with this, and we have so much control over this disease.
Absolutely, and I've seen remarkable recoveries. And you know, a lot of people make slight shifts in their diet and lifestyle, and with slight shifts, you get slight improvements. But when you do an about face and you really make dramatic changes, you get dramatic results. And so I've seen people who have been diabetic for 20 years and who no longer have diabetes. And so it's shocking to their healthcare providers, actually, but they have, I can give some examples, but you know, their blood sugar, their fasting blood sugar is now 80 milligrams per deciliter, and they're on no medications. So if this is sustained for a full year, that is technically reversal. So we see it, and it's exciting.
That is so exciting. And I want to, you know, you mentioned the word dramatic changes, and I really want to get into the details of what that dramatic change looks like. And then you also touched on another really great point that I get asked a lot, which is, can you reverse diabetes? You know, from people who are currently diabetic, and if they can make those lifestyle changes. And I think what you just said, that if you are a year out, and you have maintained that blood sugar in an acceptable range, that you have actually reversed the disease.
Yes, and it has been defined, and it's been published, and so we know exactly what is required to reverse the disease, and it is to maintain those blood sugars at a normal range for a year with no medication. And so I think what people need to understand is whether or not you're able to reverse the disease will depend on the functioning of your pancreas. And so if your beta cells have been really severely damaged, you may not be able to completely reverse the disease. But I would say in the majority of people with type 2 diabetes, we have very good success with reversal.
Yeah, and that's really a good point about acting early. So for our listeners, the pancreas makes the insulin. So if a person has had insulin resistance, the primary problem with type 2 diabetes, over time, that pancreas has been working extra hard. Yes. And it can burn out a little bit. So the ability to reverse that type of damage gets harder and harder.
Absolutely.
And you've done a lot of work on this through the Diabetes Wellness Project in the Marshall Islands. What have you seen there, and can you tell us more about that project?
Oh, for sure. So the Marshall Islands, for those that aren't familiar with these islands, are about 2,300 miles southwest of Hawaii. They're very, very isolated. There's nothing within a couple of thousand miles in any direction. And so these individuals that are Marshallese that have lived, you know, on these islands for many generations, they literally had no diabetes present. Even 70, 80 years ago, it was just non-existent there. And now, today, they have among the highest rates of type 2 diabetes on the planet. And so what happened? Well, what happened was they went from living off the land. And where we see people living off the land, whether it's our First Nations people or the Native Americans or the people on these islands, where people live off the land, their bodies tend to be very metabolically efficient, which means that they have to manage surviving famine because sometimes they can't get a lot of food. So their bodies become efficient that way. And also, they tended to be very physically active because to get enough food, you had to work really hard. And so when all of a sudden people that have been, you know, their ancestors have lived this way for many generations, and all of a sudden they shift to a diet that's full of added fat, sugar, and salt, and is very processed, and they're doing very little activity, they get diabetes really quickly. They are not metabolically designed to be able to withstand that kind of assault. and so we see huge rates in these populations. And so what we did in the Marshall Islands was we went in and we took five groups of individuals and assigned them to either an intervention group or sort of the usual care in the Marshall Islands. And so the lifestyle intervention group received a plant-based diet, regular exercise. We did all kinds of education about growing your own food and proper sleep and all of the usual lifestyle factors that can affect your risk. And what we saw was within a fairly short order, tremendous changes in their, you know, their diabetes. So within a couple of weeks, most of them had to be taken off medications. And in many cases, we saw you know, normalization of blood sugars. And it was shocking to them. And one of the things that was so interesting is people in the Marshall Islands eat so little fiber in their normal diet. So their normal diet is white rice, Spam or other meat, you know, often barbecued. And they wash it down with high fructose corn syrup drink called luau. And the favorite snack of the children especially is dry ramen noodles with Kool-Aid powder sprinkled on top. I couldn't have designed a diet to induce diabetes more effectively than the diet the people on these islands have adopted. It's processed meat, sticky white rice, and sugar drinks, and then these kinds of deep fried noodles, and it's really very, very, very tragic. And so you can imagine this explains their current rates of diabetes, but you can imagine what happens when you're on a diet like that and all of a sudden you start to eat whole plant foods. And the first thing that happens is you go from going to the bathroom once a week to going to the bathroom once or twice a day. And it's almost scary for them. They're not used to that kind of change. So we have to walk them through all of these kinds of physiological changes. But in, you know, to make the long story a little shorter, we saw drops of A1Cs by, you know, 3 months of almost 2 points on average. And that's including the people that weren't sticking very well to the program. You know, we saw dramatic changes, and we did this research in 2006, and I continue to go back to the country every year or two to continue this work in a more general population-based way.
That really is dramatic, Brenda. Just to put that in the context of medication, so there's currently no oral medication for diabetes that accomplishes that 2-point drop in hemoglobin A1C. So what you've been able to accomplish with that lifestyle intervention is really more effective than what we typically prescribe.
Yeah, I would, and the other thing is what we typically prescribe, or what physicians typically prescribe, means side effects that are not always very favorable for health. Whereas this diet, all of the side effects are positive. You know,
exactly.
You reduce your risk of heart disease, you feel more energetic, you lose weight. It's just all of the good things that one hopes for. And so there are huge advantages to choosing a dietary approach as opposed to a pharmaceutical approach.
Right. And you and I have talked about this, Brenda, that this diet of reversing diabetes helps every other medical condition, such as heart disease, such as high cholesterol, such as high blood pressure. And right. Doing this through lifestyle doesn't just save needing medications for one condition, but for multiple conditions.
Absolutely. And can I give you, I'd love to share a story with you, because people often say to me, well, you know, that's fine for the Marshall Islands, but can this all work at home? And what I say to them in response is the Marshall Islands has far greater barriers to health than we do. They have very limited access to healthy food. It's super expensive. They have, you know, very little fitness opportunities. Whereas where we are, we have complete access. And I'd love to share the story of a man that I recently worked with who had been diagnosed in 1993, and he had not only diabetes, but he had cardiovascular disease. He had just had a serious heart attack before we started working together. He had hypertension, high cholesterol, peripheral artery disease. He was going into renal failure. He had recurring gout 6 or 7 times a year. He had cataracts. He was on 17 pills and 35 to 40 units of insulin a day. And he had even been told by his doctor that he needed to get his affairs in order because he wasn't expected to live that long. And in less than a year, on a whole food plant-based diet, this man was taking 0 insulin and 0 pills. And his fasting glucose was down to normal. His A1C was 5.1, blood pressure 115 over 70. His kidney function normalized. He didn't have a single further recurrence of gout. I mean, it was just a really dramatic example of what is possible when you take the diet to the, you know, to the extreme in terms of health.
Right. As you said in the beginning, which was so well put, to get dramatic results, you have to make dramatic changes. And let's jump into the dramatic changes. So in terms of kind of breaking down the diet that, you know, that people are following to get the types of results that you're seeing, yeah, can you speak more in the specifics about it?
Oh, absolutely. So the diet, what I would recommend is a fairly low glycemic load diet. So you don't want high amounts of foods that are going to drive your blood sugar up. So what I tell people to focus on is vegetables and legumes as mainstays. And so when we look at vegetables and fruits as a category, we want at least 10 servings a day. And we want to supersize the green leafies. So at least 3 servings of dark green leafy vegetables a day. And I know people say this is so hard, but you can do this with one big salad. Or you can do it with a little bit of greens at each meal, whatever your preference might be. And I encourage, when we're talking about fruits, to always include berries if possible, and citrus fruits, which tend to have a little lower glycemic impact. And we want variety. We want every color of the rainbow. So I would say what I would encourage people to do is have at least one giant salad a day. And it's not iceberg lettuce and tomatoes and cucumbers. It's dark green leafy vegetables with other vegetables that cover every part of the rainbow. So you might want things like a little bit of red or purple cabbage to get the red, purple, blue in, or some sort of other green, you know, greens that have a purple hue, red peppers and watermelon radishes, and, you know, all of the you know, the yellow peppers and all of the different colors to get the whole rainbow in. And then with legumes, you want at least 2 servings a day. You can start with 1, but the more legumes you consume at each meal, the better, really. So, and legumes, I'm talking about beans, peas, chickpeas, lentils, that whole family of foods, including some soy foods like edamame, or even some of the soy products like tempeh or tofu would be appropriate to include. And then one of the things, so that's the fruits and vegetables and legumes. Now you get to the starchy foods. And so the starchy foods, we're talking about whole grains and starchy vegetables. And this is where you get a lot of carbohydrate in a fairly small quantity of food. So you need to use a little bit more portion control, especially if you need to lose weight. But here, the biggest trick, and this is really hugely important, is we need to get rid of refined carbohydrates. So when you take a grain, for example, and let's just take wheat, for example, and you turn the wheat into flour, in that process, if you refine the flour into white flour, you're removing, you know, 80 to 90% of the fiber, 75 to 80% of the vitamins and minerals, and about 95% of the protective phytochemicals that are there. And then, of course, nobody eats a bowl of white flour. Before they eat it, they add fat and sugar and salt and additives and so on, and they eat it in the form of, you know, breads and crackers and cookies and all of these things. And so what people need to understand is, even, you know, within sort of the whole grain category, even if we get rid of the refined grains in the whole grain category, there are different levels of protection from whole grains. And so what I tell people with diabetes to do is stick to intact whole grains as much as humanly possible. And what that means is grains that have had nothing added that's harmful to health, and nothing taken away that's beneficial to health. So you're having things like Kamut berries and oat groats and quinoa and, you know, black or red rice or brown rice. You're having foods that are, you know, are really in their intact whole form, and you're moderating your quantity. So, and then as you process whole grains, even you go from intact to cut grains like steel cut oats, to rolled grains like rolled oats, to shredded grains like shredded wheat, to ground grains like whole wheat flour, to flaked grains like flaked cereal, to puffed grains like puffed wheat or puffed rice. You actually, what you're doing is you're destroying nutrients as you go down the list, but you're also increasing the glycemic impact. So you really want to stay near the top of that hierarchy where you're getting mostly intact or perhaps cut grains like steel cut oats. And this is just allows for dramatic improvement. And then the other food that I didn't mention is nuts and seeds. And where diabetes risk is concerned, people that include nuts and seeds in their diet every day have a risk reduction, and it helps with glycemic control. So you want to have probably an ounce or two of nuts and seeds a day, and preferably an ounce of nuts and an ounce of seeds. And your best choices are those that are rich in omega-3 fatty acids, like chia seeds and flax seeds and hemp seeds and walnuts. So yeah, in a nutshell, that covers the food groups.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
And, you know, the glycemic index pertains to carbs. And of course, that's such a critical part of managing and reversing diabetes. And as you just said, it's a blend of what you shouldn't have plus what you should have. And I love that about your message, that it's about adding the good stuff and removing the bad stuff.
Yeah.
And there, of course, all the food groups and the macronutrients play a role in diabetes, and specifically also the role of the different types of protein, different types of fats. And probably, I guess I find the least emphasized is the difference between animal protein and plant protein and their role in diabetes. How do you advise people in these lifestyle programs and in your cookbooks about the role of protein?
Yeah, well, it's so interesting. We have a lot of studies that have compared the impact of animal and plant protein. And there was one study from 2016 with over a couple of 100,000 participants that showed that replacing 5% of your energy from animal protein with plant protein would reduce risk of diabetes by about 23%. And there was another study that from Melbourne that was over 20,000 participants showing us that sort of similar risk reduction, even greater. It was 40% lower risk with plant protein and about 30% higher risk with animal protein. And they're just all kinds of studies. We have a number of meta-analyses looking at red meat intake and diabetes risk, and showing with processed red meat, you know, as much as 50% increased risk with daily intake, and as much as, 48% higher risk with just a total meat intake. With unprocessed red meat, it generally varies from about 10 to 20% increased risk, but still significantly increased risk. And one of these studies that just came out, 2018, that I thought was absolutely fascinating, looked at a group of people who were on weight loss diets, and they compared a weight loss diet that provided the recommended intake of protein, 0.8 grams per kilogram body weight, versus a higher protein diet of 1.2 kilograms per kilogram of body weight. And what they found was the people on the high protein diet lost weight. They were able to retain lean body mass pretty well, but their insulin resistance was absolutely unaffected by their weight loss because of their high protein intake. And this was so interesting to me, because this type of study comparing, you know, very similar diets producing very similar weight loss, but just different in the amount of protein in the diet. Those eating more protein could not reverse their insulin resistance. So I think that's one of the reasons we have such tremendous success in reversing insulin resistance with a plant-based diet, because the protein is naturally moderate. It's adequate, no question. The average intake in the Adventist Health Study too for vegans was about 70 grams of protein a day. So absolutely adequate, but not excessive like it is with a more meat-centered diet, like a paleo or a, you know, these kinds of low-carb diets.
And this protein issue is such an important one that you bring up, because it's the type and the quantity. And I think the messaging has been that everyone needs their protein. You know, we now can get protein water. You know, it's in everything that's manufactured. And there is such a thing as too much protein. And we're seeing that. Like in my practice, we do see strain on the kidneys. We see some adverse effects of people, you know, doing what they think is the right thing, which is just protein. And, you know, you've also addressed the common concern that I get of people worrying that they're not getting enough protein through plant sources, such as the beans and the lentils. Yeah. And you know, it seems as though, you know, just the plant-based, that 0.8, you know, kilograms or per kilogram amount of protein.
I'm sorry, grams per kilogram,
Yeah. Is really, you know, you more than meet that, you know, and we, you know, it may be a little different in Canada. We use pounds more than we do kilograms for weight. So for us, it's roughly your weight in pounds divided by 3 is the number of grams, roughly, that you should try and eat every day.
Right.
And most people, you know, come pretty easily, come close to that without needing to try very hard.
Yes. And so, so if we look in at the RDA, which is 0.8 grams per kilogram, that would be slightly less than 0.4 grams per pound. And so it really is quite achievable. So it's not quite 0.3, but it's, you know, even if you wanted to be generous, one of the groups that needs a little extra protein probably are seniors, because of the digestibility factor, that they don't break down protein and absorb it as efficiently as we do when we're younger. And so there are some countries that say we should increase by 25% the intakes for seniors, and that's hard because seniors are eating fewer calories. So, but even with that, if we even went to 0.5 grams per pound of body weight, it's still not an amount that is unachievable on a plant-based diet if you're including reasonable sources of protein like legumes. And seeds are very concentrated in protein, especially hemp seeds and pumpkin seeds. And so it's certainly not overly challenging if a person, you know, looks at the sources of protein. You know, what a lot of people don't realize is that we need about 10 to 15% of calories from protein in the diet. And if you eat a variety of whole plant foods, all whole plant foods, with the exception of fruit, some starchy vegetables are a little on the low side, but all other foods contain at least 10 to 15% of calories from protein. Legumes are about 20 to 30. Non-starchy vegetables are about 20 to 40. So when you think about that, grains are probably 10 to 17 or in that neighborhood. Seeds are up to or above 20% of calories from protein in some cases. So it's really very, very easy to achieve adequate protein.
And, you know, you've obviously have many recipes that are your favorite recipes. For diabetes, do you have like favorite go-to recipes that are quick and simple for like a breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
Yes, so that is what the KICK Diabetes Cookbook was really all about. So the KICK Diabetes Cookbook provides, you know, just a beautiful selection of recipes for breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, for even for desserts, everything that you could imagine that are simple, are completely sugar-free, oil-free, whole food, plant-based in their orientation, and very, very effective in terms of treating diabetes. So so breakfast, if I just to give you an example, I think one of the strongest, healthiest breakfasts is to have an intact whole grain like oat groats. If you could also have steel cut oats, but my preference would be to have an even larger grain like kamut berries. I cook one batch for the week practically, or maybe two batches a week, put them in my fridge, and in the morning I make a breakfast bowl with my intact cooked whole grain, fresh fruit, some berries. I usually freeze about 200 or 300 pounds of berries, so I have plenty of berries for my breakfast during the winter.
You must have a big freezer.
I have two freezers actually. But and I freeze a lot of other things as well. And then I put in some sort of non-dairy unsweetened yogurt, like a cashew almond yogurt, and I top it with a mix of seeds, chia, flax, hemp, pumpkin, and some Brazil nuts for the selenium.
That sounds so good.
Yeah, it's absolutely delicious, and I use an unsweetened non-dairy milk with it, and it's delicious. And these whole grains are so much fun if people can just get beyond the thing that you have to cook them, but it's not a big deal because you cook enough for several days, so it's an easy, and it's not hard to cook. Just a bunch of water and your grains and let them cook and that's it. And they're chewy, so they're very satisfying. They will keep you until lunch. You need no snacks after you've had that kind of breakfast bowl.
Yeah, and it's so great that your collection of recipes just take the healthy food and make them so delicious.
Yes, and that was really the goal, because people won't do it if it doesn't taste good.
Of course not.
Yeah. So, and I find also you have to allow yourself time for your palate to adjust, because it takes a couple, probably about 3 weeks for your palate to really adjust. So for me, if I have something with sugar in it, I can almost gag on it. It just tastes horrible to me because I'm not used to having added sugar in things. So for me, sweetness is derived from fruit, and that sometimes is almost too sweet. So your palate really does change as you start introducing healthier foods.
And for people who want to make that change and, you know, really try and fight and prevent disease through diet and, say, you know, get a cookbook and try recipes, do you have advice for people starting? Because some people, you know, just knowing how to even cook with these whole grains, and these are such ingredients that maybe people aren't used to preparing at home, and maybe a lot of people may be in the habit of microwaving or using foods that are prepared. Any advice for people who are just trying to make that switch?
Yeah, so there are a number of programs that can really help teach you the tools, you know, that you need to get started. And there's one called CHIP, which is the Complete Health Improvement Project, that is offered in many cities that people could take. There are various diabetes support programs like E4 Diabetes Solutions or Diabetes Undone that are whole food plant-based programs that can really help with that transition. And I think also to just to take it one step at a time. So start with one meal and make it breakfast and start there. And if doing an intact whole grain is too overwhelming, start with rolled oats or steel cut oats. And then graduate from there. Just keep making changes and think about the things that you're going to be adding rather than the things that you're taking away. So you need to be having, because what you want, what you need to remember is that food can actually feed disease or fight disease. Every single thing that crosses your lips becomes you. It's not just fuel for your body. It's what your body is made of. It's how you build and rebuild every tissue in your body. It comes from the food you eat. It's what your brain is made of. And so what you want to do when you're trying to reverse a disease is you want every single calorie that crosses your lips to be fighting disease. It's like, I guess you could think of it as food can be either adding fuel to the fire or water to the fire and putting the fire out. And so you want your food to be like water on the fire. And so it needs to be loaded with antioxidants and phytochemicals and trace minerals and all of the good things. And so that means whole plant foods need to predominate, and they need to be, you know, minimally processed. So that means that you're going to have to do some food preparation. Now, certainly you can buy a prepackaged bag of salad and it's pre-washed and it can make your, you know, your full meal salad much easier. So you start with this mixed bag of greens and then you add on all of your different colorful vegetables and some beans and maybe some cubed steamed sweet potato or something like that that will help to fill you up. And then again, the dressing is a bit of a challenge because most dressings on the market are either sugar or oil. And what you want your dressing to be is a whole food base. So like a tahini, lemon or lime dressing that you would blend in your blender, and that works very, very well. So it's just, it is a whole new world. So it really helps to, you know, get involved and take a course or get involved with a group where you can have some support.
Gosh, that's mouthwatering just listening to you. And I love your passion and all the energy that you put into the programs that you do and increasing the awareness through all your cookbooks and all your writing. So thank you so much for all that you do.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I so appreciate it.
Yeah. And so for all of our listeners, so these fabulous recipes are in the Kick Diabetes Cookbook. And you can also visit Brenda on her website, brendadavisrd.com. And we'll have that posted on our website. And you know, Brenda, what you're saying reminds me, and you know, I recently heard someone say that the three biggest mistakes that people in America make in terms of diet and risk of chronic disease, including diabetes, is breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I love that.
And I think you just spoke beautifully about how true that is and how we can just reverse those three mistakes right then and there in a really delicious way.
That's so great. Yeah, and I think what people need to remember is that there are a lot of people that have succeeded in this task that can be support. And now that we have the internet and so many support groups, you know, that are just available wherever you live because they're all online, you can do this. You really have everything within you to deal with this and to turn your life around. And it is beyond exciting when you succeed in doing that because it opens so many doors for you.
Yeah, and that's such a great point. There's so many resources and support, especially, you know, a lot of my patients struggle with the fact that not all their family members are on board, and it's very hard to try and maybe prepare two different meals. And just knowing that there's a whole world of support out there. So reach out, get the recipes, make it fun, and just enjoy that path to feeling better.
Yeah, it really saddens me when I think about that, because I know that families that do provide the support to their loved ones when they're going through this are saving their lives. And you know, the fellow that I told you about that had the remarkable recovery of all of these diseases, what happened in his case was his son was diagnosed with cancer, and he decided to go on this diet to support his son. And he didn't expect any changes in his own health because he was told by his physicians that he had chronic, irreversible progressive diseases. And you know, so he benefited by supporting his family member beyond his wildest dreams.
That's great. Yeah, I think sometimes we're more motivated to do something for someone else than we are for ourselves. So that's a great story.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Brenda. This has been such a great discussion, and I appreciate you sharing, you know, everything that you just shared with us, because there's so much good information.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Berquist. I really appreciated being on the show, and I hope that I provided a little bit of inspiration or motivation for your listeners. There's nothing that warms my heart more than seeing somebody completely transform their health.
I'm sure you did, because I was inspired listening to you.
Oh, thank you.
Great. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by the Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness Center at Emory. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.